Now, Rowan Dean is one of the most respected figures in Australian advertising. He's won more awards than I've had hot dinners, and he co-wrote what has been acclaimed as one of the world's greatest commercials. It was called Photo Booth, and it was for Hamlet Cigars. Now, that campaign employed the copy line, "Happiness is a cigar called Hamlet." They don't make ads like that anymore, because they can't make ads like that anymore. Rowan is a panellist on ABC TV's The Gruen Transfer, and lately he's been doing a lot of writing about, amongst other things, climate change advertising. We met up recently and recalled a gentleman called Harry McCann, who along with his partners founded an ad agency in 1912 with the motto, "Truth Well Told." Well, 99 years later, is that still a viable working definition of advertising?
I like to think it is, Paul. Unlike other disciplines such as PR and the so-called political spin, advertising really is most effective when it is based on the truth. I've said before that the truth can be slightly polished or slightly varnished, but it is got to have at its heart the truth. Otherwise, the public sees straight through it and it's not effective as advertising.
And judging by the success of the Gruen Transfer, people like ads.
I think a big reason for the success of the Gruen Transfer is that people like to understand the strategies that go into selling everything from a packet of cornflakes through to whatever it might be, climate change, for example. The beauty of advertising is that it acts to distill what can be very complicated or even contradictory arguments. Advertising forces you to distill your story, your message, your strategy down to bite-sized portions that you can understand and people can take on board.
Well, with these two thoughts in mind, let's look at some campaigns, starting with Earth Hour. How did that campaign start?
Well, interestingly, Earth Hour began, I believe, from the World Wildlife Fund. We're looking at something. They wanted an event or some kind of media inspired stunt that would draw attention to the issue of climate change. Now, we're going back 5 or 6 years now. Of course, now you don't need to.
This would be about the time of Al Gore's An Inconvenient Truth.
Absolutely. And in order to find a way of drawing a lot of attention to the issue, but without a huge budget, the World Wildlife Fund went to Leo Burnett's advertising agency and Fairfax with the idea, let's do something big that people notice, that people talk about, that will generate a lot of PR. And you find often now advertising or rather promotional stunts are used in order to generate the PR that goes along with them. Earth Hour began in that way.
And Earth Hour, the campaign, the idea, it went on to win huge awards, including a Titanium Award at the Cannes Advertising Festival. It's won a lot of awards. Is that important?
It is, and possibly one of the worst aspects of the advertising industry is it is absolutely infatuated with the idea of awards and awarding itself as often as it possibly can. Something like the Cannes Festival, which has become, obviously on the back of the Cannes Film Festival, the Cannes Advertising Festival, is hugely important globally in terms of rewarding creativity. The object of the Cannes Festival is to say this is a great creative idea. Earth Hour picked up what is called the Titanium, so lots of accolades for everybody involved, based on what was deemed to be a very creative idea.
Now, recalling the maxim, truth well told, on your understanding, what was Earth Hour selling?
Well, that's a good question, and I was certainly critical of Earth Hour at the time, and still am on some issues, in that it was generating awareness of an issue, which is fine, but the solution that it was providing to turn off your lights for an hour once a year was pretty ineffectual, obviously. What it was selling was a message, but that message, when taken to its logical conclusions, is one of abstinence from energy use on a grand scale.
And did they achieve that communication?
Well, they certainly got a lot of awareness, and a lot of people felt very good about having switched their lights off for an hour. And to me, I think there was, unfortunately, a slightly hypocritical element to the whole thing, and that the amount of energy used to create the ads and to get people to drive down to go and look at the lights being switched off was probably counterproductive. In terms of awareness, it went on year after year. Last year, Earth Hour realized that they had to try and sell a broader message, so they started to call it You Should Do More Than Just the 1 Hour, which is kind of self-evident. But I still think the message, it's not good enough to just say we're raising awareness of the issue. You've got to be able to provide a stronger solution, and I don't think Earth Hour does that intentionally. I think unintentionally it does. It gives the message that abstinence from energy use is really the only way forward if you believe the science of climate change.
Well, we have a new federal government campaign about a carbon tax. You've written about this. What's the ad saying?
Now, that's a good question, Paul, because, again, going back to what I was saying about strategy, this government has jumped around from one strategy to the other on the issue of the carbon tax. First, we were told 1 million people are going to be better off under this tax. So a blatant bribe, a blatant appeal to wealth redistribution. What that has to do with climate change, I still struggle to understand. Giving more people more money to spend, I don't think is actually going to reduce carbon emissions, but that's another story. They then jumped into another strategy, which was seen in the Get Up ads featuring Kate Blanchett and Michael Caton. The strategy there was, we may as well do something because it makes us feel good. Well, again, not a desperately intellectual argument. As playing for emotions, yes, but the arguments they put forward were pretty much as flimsy as the cardboard cutouts that Kate and Michael were prancing around in. So this third strategy is basically saying the carbon tax is a levy on renewables. Okay, that's fine, but it's a different strategy. It's the third strategy they've attempted to sell us.
So in essence, this campaign sort of saying we should put more money into certain areas by putting a tax on other areas? Is that what it's saying?
It's basically saying that the renewables industry is going to do very well out of the carbon tax. A lot of money is going to come out of your pocket towards renewables, which is great. Will renewables then be of a sufficient quantity to solve the issue of reducing carbon emissions? The ad itself tells us, no, they won't. One of the third individual on the ad, a certain Miles George from Infigen Energy, tells us carbon will still be a significant proportion of our generating emissions for a long time to come.
Yes, he says in the ad, for a long time, coal will remain a significant proportion of our energy operations. Now, let's go through the ad and let's look at some of the other things that were said. We have Wendy Maloney from Infigen Energy, and she says, putting a turbine up in the air and letting wind give us power has to be a better option.
I mean, again, this is it's a very good option for her because she's in that industry and she's going to make a lot of money out of it, and fantastic, good luck to her. But what the ad does is it tries to portray working to a cleaner energy future as something that we should all be actively supporting, which is fine, but it is dishonest to pretend that this is a solution to climate change.
Well, we also have an Aussie bloke. He looks very blokey, and he says, we see the amount of money that Germany has thrown towards research and development of solar power, and they've got stuff all sun. What's that telling us?
Yes, and he's a great character, and he says, yep, they've got stuff all sun over in Germany, which is great. What he doesn't mention is that the solar power generation generates stuff all electricity. In fact, I think it's a tiny percentage of Germany's electricity is and will be generated through solar, which is the problem we have here as well.
And finally in the ad, we have Seb Henfest. He works for Bloomberg New Energy Finance, and he says, internationally, the investment in clean energy is rivaling fossil energy today. Is that a true statement?
It may well be a true statement. The reason the investment is there is because governments all over the world, particularly in Europe, have legislated that investment must happen. So what we have is money being, taxpayers' money, being pumped into the renewables industry, without the governments actually saying, what we are doing here is charging you a lot more on your electricity bills in order to finance renewables, which is fine if you happen to work in the renewables industry. But the renewables industry cannot and will not in the foreseeable future, no matter how much money they pump into it, be able to provide sufficient baseload energy of the sort that we all use in our daily lives, which takes us back to, do we start abstaining from energy use and go the Earth Hour route of switching everything off?
Now, Rowan Dean, you've worked in the industry for decades and you understand how ads work. What would be the consumer's take out on watching this ad a few times.
It's interesting because I suspect most people have now made up their minds on climate change one way or the other. I think people aren't really going to be persuaded dramatically by these ads. I think people who are relieved that the government is doing something, see tangible proof. Okay, renewables, I'm glad money is going into renewables, so people take that message out. For others, I think the fact that, for me, the only strategy for the carbon tax is to say this will solve climate change. The ads aren't saying that, and I think a lot of people are disappointed by that.
So Malcolm Turnbull, when he's pointing to those opposed to cutting emissions, says, look, many do this because it's not in their own financial interests. Now, you've worked in the industry for a long, long time. Here's a hypothetical. Someone knocks on the door and says, look, I want you to do a campaign for Malcolm Turnbull. What would that campaign be like? What would you be saying? Who are you talking to? What do you want to say to them? And what do you want them to do? So your project is Malcolm Turnbull. What do you want to say?
Well, what's clear to me is that Malcolm Turnbull seems to have more to say to Labour voters and the Labour Party than he has to say to Liberal voters. Malcolm is probably the only politician who has consistently shown conviction about climate change. He hasn't jumped from one side to the other. He hasn't changed his mind on it. He's been very, very consistent on it. So I hypothesised the other day that, well, maybe Malcolm should really be leader of the Labour Party. It would seem to make a lot of sense. And I had an article, I wrote an article to that effect. And astonishing number of people came back to me saying, what a great idea. This would be awesome. A lot of Labour voters saying, this is what we need. We need a leader like Malcolm who, A, has the sound business acumen to understand how to do the carbon tax or the emissions trading system or whatever it is properly, and B, has the heart and soul of a Labour person who believes in climate change.
So from an advertising and promotion perspective...
So from an advertising and promotions point of view, Malcolm's speech was clearly aimed, if you're saying who was he talking to, he was saying he was talking to Labour voters in his Virginia Chadwick speech, or the Labour Party, I believe. He was saying, if you need to sell your carbon tax, you need someone with solid business acumen and an understanding of Labour principles to sell that tax. So where he was saying that the opponents of the carbon emissions scheme were opposing it for reasons of self-interest, he was very much playing the Labour class warfare thing. It's those evil rich people over there who are opposing it. We solid working class people... Malcolm likes to believe he's solid working class people.
Certainly in his origins, he is.
Absolutely, he is. Yes. He's turned the issue into one of class warfare, which I thought was fascinating, and he's clearly talking to Labour voters. In terms of an advertising campaign, imagine if Malcolm were to lead the Labour Party, which I think certainly a lot of people would like
to
see.
Anything is possible.
Anything is possible. Some great ads we could do around that. First of all, you could actually say, Malcolm Turnbull, he'll pay off our national debt by himself. Which I think could be perfectly reasonable. Kevin 07 was obviously very effective as a slogan for Kevin Rudd and happened to be in the year 2007. The next election will be in the year 2013, so we're stuck with Malcolm 13, which I thought the line could be Malcolm 13, unlucky for some, showing visuals of Tony Abbott, Julia Gillard, Kevin Rudd, Greg Conbey.
Sounding good.
Shorten and so on. And then, of course, I thought... we could even just say, Malcolm, he's worth millions of votes.
Look, this is sounding like a very promising campaign. You might get a call, Rowan Dean.
Well, you never know. Always happy for the phone to ring.
Rowan Dean, we could talk a lot more, but for now, thank you. But we look forward to further discussions about truth well told.
Thanks, a great Rowan. Topic.
Rowan Dean is Counterpoint's regular commentator on Tall Tales and True in all forms of media. And as a postscript to Rowan's speculations, last week a poll conducted by Essential Media had public support for Gillard as ALP leader down to 12%. Support for Malcolm Turnbull as ALP leader was 11%, and he's not even in the Labour Party.